Well, I'm so excited to have my guest today, Marion Woodman. To me, she is the voice of the feminine. I remember when she came to Woman of Wisdom in 1995, and we had a full hall and people on the edge of their seats to listen to this woman speak pearls of wisdom. At age 50, Marion Woodman changed her life. She quit her job as a high school English teacher, went to Zurich, and trained to be an analyst. Now in her late, well, this is written years ago, her early 80s, right. Woodman is a Jungian analyst, teacher, and a prolific author of analytical and feminine psychology. Her books include The Owl Was a Baker's Daughter, Addiction to Perfection, Pregnant...
That's because it's Shakespeare.
Yes, and Leaving My Father's House. Yes. She's also written an account of her recovery from cancer, Bone, Dying into Life. Woodman has released a CD entitled Crown of Age. This crown, Woodman says, symbolizes the culmination of one's internal and external development as human beings. And only a lifetime of experiences confers the crown. I know that Marion has that lifetime of experience, and she wears the crown very elegantly. So welcome, Marion.
Well, thank you for that beautiful introduction.
Well, you're welcome. So last spring, I interviewed you for the Aspire magazine, and you spoke about the grief you were experiencing at the thought of leaving loved ones. Your parting words to me were about learning how to be creative in your life and in your mind when your body is no longer able to as it was before. And you told me, and that's another conversation to have someday. Well, here's that day. We're going to have that conversation today.
Good.
So, yeah, so the topic you chose to talk about is dying into life. And I think that's quite a statement. And you know, death is such a taboo topic in our culture. It makes people uncomfortable. And here you're saying to die into life. And usually we think of, well, we live and we eventually die. So what do you mean by dying into life?
Well, I mean that you have to recognize that there are many things you can no longer do. As your body begins to lose its strength, and one after another, the innards break down, you have to find a place of a new vitality that can bear the strength of being born into literally another reality. And that takes a lot of strength because you're working against, at least I know I am, a physical body that is breaking down. But the spirit is still totally strong, even stronger than ever.
Yes, and I know, I remember my father saying when he turned 90, he didn't feel old. I mean, maybe his body does, but his mind was still the same age he always was.
Yes, that's exactly what I feel too. In fact, I think my mind puts things together now in a beautiful way that just holds a pattern in my life. And I can see that. It gives me great peace.
Well, talk to us more about that. What is that pattern?
Well, you know, I would think 10 things that I could do and would love to do. And I can get so excited about all 10 that I just start wasting energy. And then I think, oh, this is crazy. I won't think about it at all. But if I can keep concentrated on one or two, then I can give all that I am, you know. And gosh, sometimes I'm pretty amazed at what I do have to give.
And that's great to be saying, you know, for someone who's 82 to live a rich and full life. So you stated, too, that the creative process always includes death in its service to life.
Yes. Well, I love what I do. Like, for example, teaching school. I taught school for 25 years. grade 13 English, the privilege of teaching Shakespeare was just life-giving to me. And I loved teaching the poets. And I used to do a show in which they were acting Shakespeare, working with the poetry and so on. Because I do believe that poetry comes out of the bones of the body. And that when you're talking, you have to allow it to go back into the bones, like music. If you don't allow the music to penetrate the body, you're missing a great deal. And the feminine is that receiver. That she can pull back and open and receive without putting herself first. Whereas so, when I'm working in the masculine side, I mean, everybody's not like this, I'm sure, but when I'm working with the masculine, I'm expecting him to take the initiative. What is the theme word here? Is there a contrast? Is there a conflict? How do we handle the situation in order to make it creative rather than destructive?
So the masculine takes charge, but the feminine receives. And that's an important role. They're not separate. They're
one.
They both. Yeah, they're one. They're what
they
you
are
say
meant to be one, and it's out of that oneness that a new personality, a whole new energy, is born. I mean, if you think of writing or you think of dancing, even. If your whole being is in the dance, if you are the music, it is just, you know, you're so alive that there is nothing else except you and the music and your partner and the dance. And that's what I call creative, you know, like if I go to a dance and that happens between me and the people I'm with, I'm just a new person for weeks. Does that sound like pie in the sky?
It sounds wonderful. I know when I've had those kind of dancing experiences, it is a it's like you're transcending into a new place. You know,
that's
when
right.
You've brought that your mind and your body and your spirit all together.
All one. But it takes, that can happen when you're painting. Other people have other avenues to that. For me, dance is my biggest avenue.
And that's because you want people to get in touch with their physical, their body. There's so much separation.
That's it, you see. And you don't get it if the body is not responding. If there's not a gut reaction to what is happening, the mind will take it on. But the body is definitely deflated. And you can see it in writing. I used to see this with students. They would start out with such electricity in them, so excited. But if they got into thinking to the point where they stopped, the energy stopped at the neck, at the throat. Literally, if you watch people writing, you can see this actually happening. Then that vitality is not available to the pen.
I'm Chris Stanis, and my guest today is Marion Woodman. We're talking about the creative process, dying into life. But before we continue, I want to make sure everyone knows how to connect with Marion's work. Her website is www.mwoodmanfoundation.org. So, Marion, let's talk about that creative process some more. What is the relationship of the creative process to your understanding of God as creative?
Well, I believe, of course, I pray to the feminine side. I think, you know, the body is the feminine side of our being. And the masculine side is that brilliant flash that can just come, drop its seed into the feminine, and there's an explosion of creativity. It's exactly the process that we go through to get born. And when you're bearing something through the brain, there has to be that thing where there's a energy from outside, an understanding that is bigger than you are, an emotion that is bigger than you are, and it just comes in and, you know, it's like a little explosion in your head. And you think, my God, that really is true. Never thought that before. And then you experience your heart is actually pounding with the recognition of that. Does that sound far-fetched to you?
It sounds beautiful. So in that process, I mean, it's almost as if we kind of go around unconscious and all of a sudden something consciously comes in, that spark.
That's the exact point. You cannot be conscious all the time. You'd be simply exhausted. People are exhausted after an hour in my office when they're trying to bring a dream into consciousness. It's very, very difficult to come over that line and between conscious and unconscious. So when you're working creatively, you are attempting to take what is in your unconscious and shape it into a poem or into a teapot or a church, whatever your creative process is. And without that, life isn't worth living, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, and there's many ways to be creative. We think of creativity as being someone who's an artist, but really we all have that. I feel creative in what I do. I know you are creative in what you do. Yes. So what's the danger?
Woman, goodness sakes, being parents, it's creative. What can be more beautifully creative than bringing up your own child and saying, you know, and suddenly you see the beauty of these new fingers and these eyes that now look at you in a different way, and the sheer glory of new life. That's creativity.
Yes, and it's a that's probably the ultimate creativity process that we do. What is the danger of being self-conscious in that creative process?
Well, I think it depends on whether you are looking at yourself. For example, I write something. Then I read it. If I get caught in my own ego, that's pretty good stuff. If I get caught in that, then I will not bring the sharpness of the process that is necessary to bring it, to focus it exactly. So that there are two different kind of rhythms there. There's the huge excitement of creating around that original thought, and then the hard work of perfecting it. I don't want to be a freak about being perfect or anything like that, but, you know, you can fix rhythms and you can fix tiny, tiny things in order to make it more clear or in order to make it more to the bones of the body. See, I think one thing that we've lost is the connection between body and mind in our education system. We expect the kids to sit in those bloody seats. I taught them for, God, dare I, 36 years. And, you know, they take a poem like Tiger, Tiger, Burning Bright in the Forest of the Night, you know, Blake. Well, it didn't do them any good at all to read that until I took them into the theater in the school. And I had a ball, and a great big fat ball. And they threw it. There were 10 of them working in a group because there were 10 different lines. And they would throw that ball as hard as they could when they pronounced the line, Tiger, Tiger, Burning Bright, in the Forest of the Night. And that energy that came with that ball, they just loved the poem, and they could tell afterwards what the poem was about in terms of the tiger in their muscles. And the poetry lived. Do you see what I mean?
Yes, I know. When you bring your body into something, it's just more vital and adds meaning to it. It's easier to remember things too. Well, it's easier to remember things.
Of course. Your
mind remembers better.
Well, you think of going through school and never touching that. Isn't it sad?
Yeah, it is. It's most of us, that's how we experience school. We sat in our seats and our minds had to turn on, and, you know, you'd fidget and get irritated and hate school.
Yeah.
Because what was there alive there for you? It was just a process. Go to school, go home.
and you see, that's what I did my best to open up a creative body as well as a creative mind and a creative soul. The three of them went together.
Yes, and I'm sure your students benefited so much from that, because that's so unusual, even today.
Come back and tell me.
Because
they really did get the something to take with them to the choir that they've joined or the theater that they've joined. And they can bring out that creativity now in their later life until they're 85 years old, maybe more.
Mm-hmm.
I just think I sound like a missionary with this, I know. But I know that watching fidgeting students, watching the clock, and you're trying to teach a magnificent soliloquy of Shakespeare. And I decided if I could not interest them, everybody in that class, to the very end of every line, I wasn't worth teaching. And boy, did we ever have some wonderful times. But now, are we answering the question?
Well, we're having a conversation. So I'm in your tape on the Crown of Age, you talk about King Lear and the lesson there. And I was quite struck by that of what he went through. And really, it was about surrendering. So what is it, in this whole dying into life, it's an act of surrender.
Yes. It's an act of surrender. It's a surrender of the ego. Because the soul process is going to continue to the last breath. But the ego may have to be sacrificed in that journey. And so I think it really is good to meditate on that. Otherwise it feels like a death too soon in the process. And then you haven't got the strength to go through with it when it's really there. I don't know if that makes sense to you. It takes strength to do what I'm talking about. I mean,
to let go of the
mental, spiritual strength.
Yeah.
And especially if you're in the dying process. I've taken enough people through that process to know that unless the soul is ready to suffer, the two sides of that, it's terribly difficult.
And so there's that place of realizing it's not about suffering.
No.
Surrendering and letting go is recognizing the transition we're going to be going through is a creative process.
That's right. Exactly. Yes. What I'm saying.
Yes.
Dying. See, that's what I think, that if you believe in the world after this one, you're being born through to another reality.
So, Marion, you were just talking about that whole surrendering process and dealing with the ego, and which is a huge thing. And there is that letting go, needing to let go of the ego, but our ego's there for a reason. And that my understanding of the ego is to protect ourselves.
It's extremely important to have a good ego. The ego deals with the ordinary world, and it's strong enough to make choices. Often, it may want something that it knows it cannot have or that it should not have, and to be able to say no. It takes a good strong ego to do that. But in allowing that yearning to die, you pull in the energy that is being released into a new ego. Well, it's the same ego, but it's just got more adulthood to it. Does that make sense?
So it's kind of like the ego is maturing, because as we go through our life lessons and we move through these various stages and we learn and we grow, our ego has to kind of evolve with us.
The ego has to grow as well. And even the persona has to grow because oftentimes you're in a vulnerable position where if the ego is in transition, you're vulnerable because you don't know quite what you're doing or the choices you're making, so that you have to be able to trust that there is another energy there that can guide and say, you may not understand now, but the answer is no, or the answer is yes, even if it terrifies me.
So that takes the art of listening. You have to listen to your spirit to trust.
You have this, and this is of course where I think journal writing comes in. Every day, just to sit down and write your thoughts. Make sure nobody's going to get hold of them either. It's absolutely you and your journal, period. Nobody else. So that you are growing through dialoguing in that journal with yourself.
Yes, it's so important. I know that I have that type of dialogue in my head. Oftentimes, just the waking up state or going to sleep. I'm not quite asleep yet. And
no.
My mind just writes and writes and writes and has all these thoughts, and I think I'll remember them. And I remember the concept, but I don't remember, it kind of loses some of that creativity that if
and
I was actually writing it.
In the moment, because the wording will be exact.
Yeah.
And it'll be quite poetic.
Yeah, it's poetic in my mind. I have to remember to get the pen and paper out.
Yeah.
So let's
keep
talk.
Keep the pen and paper right beside you, your bed.
Yes. And so in that writing process and journaling like that, it's allowing you, what can happen is opening your heart. And you talk about your heart cracking open. And I think this relates to this dying into life too. I remember when my mom passed away, it felt like this cracking open of my heart. My emotions were so intense, so alive. Can you talk about that?
Well, having been through a similar experience with my own mother and certainly both my brothers and father, there is, when you see this, the soul of the person you love leaving, taking flight as it were, you're in sacred space. The most sacred space I think you're ever in on this earth until you're in the place of death itself. And it's quite terrifying and at the same time huge thanksgiving that you can experience it. It's a double, you know, like so many things, it's a double-sided thing. The you suddenly are aware of the love you've had for this person and the fact that it is being taken away from you. Does that make sense? Hello?
Yes. Yes, it's and it's hard to describe until you've gone through it. I remember
it is hard. It is hard because the intensity of it you may never have experienced before. I certainly never experienced the intensity of being that close to the other side.
Yeah, and that is. It's like a veil. That veil is lifted in that moment.
Boy, it's lifted. And if you are capable of staying, that's a place, of course, that a lot of people just run and get a cigarette. But if you can stay with it, right in the, even with the dialogue with the dying person, the insights can be with you for the rest of your life. I think it's the most huge honor to be present at a death. I mean, I have to go face this with my analysis sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's that. It's just it's a moment. It's that moment of a transition that is, and it's a mystery.
Of course, it's a mystery, and that's what makes it so vital. Until we are actually in it, we won't know the answer.
True. And that creative, and it takes us back to that creative process. You talked about a birthing of a child being a creative process and beautiful. And we don't honor that. You know, we have all these passages we go through of life, and we honor the birth more than we do the death. And actually, it's just as beautiful if you think about the potential of what you're transitioning into in that creative process of death.
Of course.
Which is the unknown, but think about when you were in your mother's womb, you were being birthed into an unknown too.
Yes,
which
indeed.
Is...
And you came down the chute, probably shrieking and screaming and kicking. And others, of course, come down sleeping. But each one has their own, and I think it's the same as we make our transition into death. Some people don't want to know anything. They just want to be put out by whatever drug is necessary, and others want to go through it.
Consciously.
Not making any judgment either way.
Yeah, it is a choice, and you see the choices that people make.
Yeah.
I remember seeing the choice of my mother. It's like, I don't want to live this way, and really making that conscious choice of it's time to let go.
Yeah.
And I had I was in a therapy group many years ago, and my therapist a few years ago passed away, and she consciously set up exactly how she wanted to do it and was able to in the hospital, and she was, had a stroke, so she wasn't conscious, but I knew she was. I held her hand, and I knew she knew I was there, and that's
yes.
really being conscious in that process.
Yes.
And it was beautiful.
It is. And, I have been through it now enough times to honor it more every time. It is so exquisitely it's as radiant for the people watching as the people going through it on some level. If you look at the faces of the people going through, if they're really in it, mind you, a lot of people just can't deal with it, and that's acceptable too. I mean, I don't want to be passing a judgment here at all. Some people just cannot deal with the grief of it because they can't face it in themselves and they can't face it in anybody else.
And yes, I think we have a harder...
People will not face it until something happens that they're forced to.
Yes, and I don't think we don't honor it. There's more fear around it in our culture. I think there's more honoring of death in other cultures, because it is of honoring the passage. I remember being in Thailand on a trek, and someone had died in the village, and we were there witnessing that ritual of we walked around that body with the people there. The body sat in a room for 3 days and was, it was wrapped up in something I forget, but there was food and flowers and family around constantly for 3 full days. And it was a process. It was part of their grieving process. It was mm-hmm. an honoring of that person, honoring of the life, and honoring of the death. And we don't
and honoring
we miss that
the family. I think also an extraordinary thing can be built up within the family that is left. I mean, I was closer
yes.
to my brothers, to everyone connected in those passages.
Yes, it does bring family together. And again, I want to give you her website where you can read about her, find her books, and all that is www.mwoodmanfoundation.org. So, Marion, we've been talking a lot about that dying process, and, before that, our ending years, our final, 10, 20 years, a lot of talk is, especially for women, we talk about becoming the crone, and you talk of crowning of age. So let's talk about that.
Crone had a root. The root was in the word crown, and it's so sad that we have lost our for old age. I mean, if you see how old people are handled in some homes, I mean, and it are handled, our culture does not view them as crones, as royal subjects. It's very, very sad if the closest people around the person who is moving into that other space, if they don't recognize that there is a soul maybe being born right there. Maybe it never did surface during the life,
Yeah, that's possible.
And that they, were so busy with their finances and all the rest of it and trying to keep the home going and so on, that this other side didn't have a chance to speak and to grow. And all of a sudden, there is this beautiful radiance about the skin. And you can see this radiance is the only word for it. And even the hands may be radiant. and to allow it to give that 100% attention and respect and encouragement, and let that side speak. You just stand and weep in front of the reality of that. It is so pure and so beautiful.
Yes, I'm just thinking about my father. He's 99 and very alert, still drives, and having a few health challenges now, but he's doing well. And there is that, he looks 75, and people are always amazed, but there is that youthfulness kind of comes back.
Yes, because they experience themselves as their self, not as somebody who's dying or not as somebody who's finished with this world, but they experience themselves in a progression. And that they are loved. This is where I think you can actually feel the pulse of the love in the room where it's happening. And there are no words required.
Yes, that's true. I remember sitting with my mother when she was sick for just 2 months.
Yes.
But there wasn't the need to talk. And, you know, you think, like, oh, you got to clear everything up and say you're sorry or say that you love them. And all there was love in the room. And I found I didn't need to speak. You can gracefully die. And it's about acceptance, too, of knowing, or you can fight your way to it. And at some point you have to, it's again to that surrender of knowing, well, this is going to happen.
And that's the hard part, I think, is this, because, I mean, you know, I'm old enough now that I know that there's a point very close when I'm going to have to be saying, this is me this time, my number's up. And it's going to be one awful shock. Even if I have pondered it and worked with it, I mean, what does that mean to cease upon the midnight with no knowledge of what's happening and where? Do you see what I mean?
Yes, yes.
I mean, Shakespeare, of course, he was just so great with this. The dying scenes in Shakespeare cover this so magnificently.
So, Marianne, it's time to close. It's been a gift to talk to you today. So thank you so much for listening today. I hope you have a blessed holiday and New Year. Blessings to your families and your close loved ones. My words today I'd like to leave you with this thought. What would your life be like if you lived your life as if every day were your last day? What would you do? What would you say? What would you feel? And how would you be creative? So remember your elders this new year. Honor them and listen to them.